4.
Мы белорусы, мирные люди.
People of Belarus just want to be free. They want to feel a freedom. They want to live not in, under dictatorship.
We hope that this will show him that we don't want him here and we want him to go away.
Welcome to the second part of our last episode of the first season of Forum for Change, dedicated to the turmoil that Belarus has been living for almost a year now. We have been talking about it with Ognjen Radionic, our colleague and manager for the regional office of Forum CIV in Eastern Europe. In the first part, Ognjen introduced for us some general aspects of the perfect storm, as he calls it, that surprisingly emerged in 2020. Join us now to have more insights on it and on what might happen in the years to come in Belarus. This is Forum for Change, a podcast about civil society around the world produced by Forum CIV. I am Carlos Cárdenas. Ognjen, something that I find that has been really particular and in some way exceptional of the mobilizations in Belarus is that you see in many places around the world that mobilizations start to grow, then comes the violent repression from police forces, and then what this creates is this confusing violence coming from everyone involved, which then is the perfect scenario for delegitimizing the social protests and the social mobilizations. But I see that in Belarus, that seems to have not happened at all. Even though those first days of violent repression, things were not turned into this chaos and confusing turmoil, but on the contrary, it helped to attract more people to the protests and to change their mindset on what the government was for them and strengthening the mobilization in a nonviolent format.
When it comes to Belarus, it's party mentality. Mm-hmm. The Belarusians are a peaceful nation in general. But it's also, I'm not sure if I should say a conscious choice in a sense that they did decide that we need to keep it peaceful on our side. And that is also a necessity because the regime is simply just begging for violence from protesters, because then they would be able to unleash full force. For 26 years, the whole system was built to repress. There are 4 or 5 different types of police, special forces like this and like that, internal army. The Secret Service is still called KGB, so I don't really need to tell any more than that. It is KGB. With all its glory for the past almost 100 years. So in the sense, this passive resistance is mentality. It was also no other choice, because as soon as you would raise your hand, that hand would be cut off. There is absolutely no way that they would be able to achieve anything with violence. In Belarus, they have managed to restrain themselves. And here I have to point out what is the breaking point of the protest were women. I have this line that I'm saying all the time, that women saved Belarus. So like I said, the Sunday 9th of August was the first wave of beating. 10th, 11th, Monday, Tuesday, there were a couple of these sort of attempts of barricades. I can't say clashes, but a little bit more cocky response by the protesters, which was then met by extreme violence.
When security forces violently cracked down on protesters with torture, beatings and thousands of arrests, many in Belarus feared the worst.
Now we are listening to a report by Al Jazeera about the women in Belarus, published in October 2020.
But a group of women emerged, marching in the capital wearing white, carrying flowers. That moment in Minsk was a turning point. The protest turned into a mass movement.
Wednesday, women came out. They organized themselves into a bunch of Telegram chats. They came out dressed in white, carrying flowers. And this was a totally a breaking point, because for the regime, who was preparing for men protesting that they can beat, this was totally out of their playbook. And this was the moment when their narrative broke. As soon as all these women came out and they have shown no fear, next Sunday was literally over 100,000 people and the avalanche was just running. These women are still coming out in their own flash mobs, in their own different actions and so on. And the protest right now is very much diverse. You have Mondays pensioners, you have Tuesdays gatherings in yards, Wednesdays you have a flash mob from doctors, and sometimes it's people gathering here and there, just putting flags somewhere, putting murals. It's a whole urban battle going on around murals. People paint them in the evening, then the government in the morning sends communal services to repaint them. Then in the evening people paint them again. And on and on and on. To illustrate this, for me, this was a fascinating moment. It's already quite cold. Many of the lakes and rivers are frozen. The protesters are using white, red, white flag as the symbol, which Lukashenko rejects. So there was several actions when people would go on ice, put white, red, white papers, and it becomes a flag. They pour water over it, and it freezes. So it becomes a frozen in the lake. It's a frozen flag. Next morning, they would send communal services to break the ice. And you can imagine how bizarre this is when you have the power of the government going around to repaint benches, to take the flag off one balcony.
Forum for Change.
What do you think will be coming up next? Because as you say, it's clear that the Lukashenko era seems to be not over yet, but agonizing. And it seems that it's irreversible, like that process and that deterioration that started with all the things going on this year. But then you see that there's this, I don't know if I'm precise, but I perceive it as a lack of leadership or a lack of coordinated leaderships to carry on something that can actually come in and fill the voids that seem to be opening with this crisis for Lukashenko and his government. So what do you feel it's coming up next?
This is a little bit of catch-22. Hmm. What was the strength of protest so far was that there was no leadership. There was nobody that Lukashenko can arrest. And don't get me wrong, this is a little bit of me misspeaking. He arrested a whole bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And he expelled from the country quite a bunch as well. So anybody who would stand out as the leader or as somebody that people respect would immediately either end up out of the country or in prison. And this, in a sense, was a strength that there was no one leader or one political group that would gather people. But that is also a weakness, because there is, as you say, nothing to fill the void.
After Lukashenko jailed most of his opponents, the opposition united behind an unlikely candidate, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, a former teacher and stay-at-home mum who stepped in to run for her husband, a popular blogger who was jailed.
This, again, are fragments of a report by ABC News, published on December 2020.
Her platform was simple: free all political prisoners and hold real elections. She and two other women attracted huge support.
It was extremely difficult for our people to wake up, but we did this year.
She stood on the elections. We don't know how much she won actually, but she probably won maybe even full majority. She got kicked out of the country. She has a team around her. They are working now towards policy proposals. They have formed coordination council as well, gathering prominent people from civil society, economists, lawyers. But as soon as somebody would get into the coordination council, he would be either he or she either arrested or kicked out of the country. What is next? Next is that Lukashenko is heavily trying to play around, to wiggle around. He understood that he needs to do some kind of constitutional changes. And the constitution in Belarus pretty much puts full judicial, executive, legislative power in the hands of president. He was toying with the idea of constitutional changes for a while now. His words were that he wants to prepare country for the next president. He will now need to speed up that process. And probably by the beginning of next year, he will do some kind of constitutional changes. In my wild guess, for 21, Belarus will be turning more and more into the police state. The only way that Lukashenko can rule over the people is by sheer force. The governance will be less functional, and that will or should make the elite think twice. Upper echelon of bureaucrats, rich people who were aligned with the regime and profiting from it, celebrities who are supporting it and profiting from it, they will need to think twice. Because if the economy goes down, if people hate them on the streets, they will need to think twice. And whether and how they will force him or convince him to step down, it's a big question. The issue that I'm not mentioning here and is very, very important is the geopolitics. For all these years, Russia was tolerating Lukashenko. They didn't particularly like him because he was kind of acting out on them, blackmailing them, always asking more, not giving enough. Now they see also the chance, if he steps down, that the political system will open, that they will have opportunity also to build their own points of influence. And this is where he is balancing out. He needs to give enough for people and for Russia to accept the change, but not to give enough that his power is threatened. How he can do that, give and not give at the same time, is anybody's guess. His era is over. The idea of paternalistic state, of a president father who takes care of everything and everybody, is over. What is coming next will be probably a bit of a messy period. Not a bit, probably a lot messy, that will go for a long time. But it's also the process of nation growing and society growing.
Yeah, and I think there's this other counterforce of the EU. Lukashenko has had to juggle both with Russia and with the EU, and that will be certainly a challenge of whatever forces come up emerging in case Lukashenko steps down.
True. What is a very strong feature of Belarusian protest is that it was not geopolitical. This is not about Europe. This is not about Russia. This is not pro-West, anti-West, anti-Russia, nothing. This is Belarusian internal matter. And Europe also smartly took that idea as well, saying, no, this is not about geopolitics. We don't want to integrate, associate, anything like that. This is about people standing up for their right in a very fundamental way. The political system that he created that was extremely closed, that was exclusively subdued to him. If that political system opens, there will be influx of new people into the system. And I would hope that many of the civil society NGOs will take the role and will get into the system and will affect actual change, policy change, structural change of the country.
Change. another thing that I wanted to ask you is if you can perceive that within civil society, there's also sectors that at some point diverge or at some point might be conflictive. If there are this kind of diverging trends and potential tensions within civil society as these things start to evolve and mature and start to configure in some way.
Majority of Belarusians, close to 60% of people, according to some available polling, wants their country to stay independent, not join EU, not join Russia, but stay as independent country, having good relations on both. During this protest, it was basically all about three demands: Lukashenko stepping down, political prisoners being freed, and new free and fair elections. There was no discussion what the next country should be. Should it be a liberal democracy? Should it be neoliberal? Privatization, no privatization, socialist states, free education? None of that was discussed. These issues will come up eventually, and it's inevitable. I would hope that Belarusian society coming out from this will be mature enough to be able to resolve those issues parliamentarily and pluralistically and democratically without going into extremes. It's a different context than it is in Ukraine, for example, where you had a very clear line between east and west of Ukraine. That line is deleted now, but before the Maidan Revolution and before the war, it was a very strong line. Russian speaking, Ukrainian speaking. You don't have any of that in Belarus. Belarusians are one nation connected with the country, regardless which language you speak, regardless whether you are from the east, from the west, whether you are of Orthodox religion or Catholic religion, they were all Belarusians.
So in some way, catching up with your analogy of the perfect storm, in some way, a second perfect storm would involve what has already been such an important factor for the mobilization, which is the nonviolent way of treating conflict and finding like the common places to join on the same cause.
Yeah, I would agree. In an ideal way, this would be the perfect storm. It would include these elite, quote unquote, within the system, realizing that they cannot go any longer with Lukashenko. Him eventually being too cornered to wiggle any longer, and then being forced to retire and to step down, perhaps with some guarantees for his own safety, perhaps by appointing some kind of successor, even appointing his successor, that then would open the space for new people to come in. For these protesters, for the Coordination Council, for civil society, for independent economists to come into the system. Nobody has interest for conflict in Belarus, for internal strife in Belarus. Europe has no interest of it. Russia doesn't have interest of it either. The only one perhaps that could have it is Lukashenko, because this would be the cause for him to stay into power. In Eastern European slang, it's called siloviki, the forces. Police, army, KGB, prosecutor office, uniforms. Their existence is in force and in violence. Their purpose is violence. So they would profit from it.
Yeah, and they should be the ones that would be more at risk if things evolve in a nonviolent way to disappear, to become something else and extinguish themselves as institutions.
Become irrelevant, become unimportant. Exactly. Yeah. And what we see now that during this year, gradually, Lukashenko was replacing economists or politicians in the government with uniforms. The prime minister is a former KGB. Big number of that government are uniforms. So he is tightening his circle as well. And he's also now in a catch-22 situation. Because if he wants to do reforms, that are expected by the people, he needs to remove these uniforms. And he is exclusively relying on uniforms to maintain the power. But in order to maintain the power for a longer time, he needs to change something. So this is a very complicated situation for him as well. Yeah. What is interesting that in past couple of weeks, we see there is something going on within the system. There were a couple of leaks of wiretap conversations between high up people within the system. Lukashenko's press secretary, some of his friends, videos of police from these body cams that the police carries appearing on YouTube. In Belarus, there are basically two, maybe three institutions that can do that kind of surveillance. It is KGB, it is Information Service under Presidential Administration, it's police. One of those, or maybe more of them, is not happy how things are going. And they are leaking information about the others to the public. So this discontent within the system, it's already there. And this recomposition of the elite will happen. Or perhaps it's even happening now that we don't even know or can't see from the outside.
And do you think there is a place there for this civil society that has been emerging in this possible scenario of a new elite that brings Lukashenko down?
I would think, or I would hope that there is. I mean, the country will need quite a bit of a do-over, of decentralization, of strengthening local authorities, of strengthening sectors, of separating powers. I would hope that some of these experts from civil society, some of the independent economists, some of the independent analysts, journalists, that they will get into the system. Into the ministries, into municipalities, into political parties, either as opposition or as the governing ones. But many of these people will just simply go back to their normal lives and have no ambition to become anything more. These people, they are not there for political power. They are a community. And this perhaps is also something that is very significant in this protest. Soviet system wouldn't really allow community forming, and the community wasn't the core of it. It was the state and it was you as a person. This forming of community is what I call birth of the nation. And this moment of solidarity and community is something that will continue. And this is something where on which you can build democracy as well. Political participation, civic engagement, all of that this is the base of it. Many of partners of NGOs, they got imprisoned 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month in jail. Some of them several times for a couple of weeks. When they would go to prison, they would be locked in a cell with 50, 60 other people from all kinds of facets of life. Then they would go and they would do lectures. They would do master courses in their prison cell. And we had a case of one of the activists doing master classes on feminism to prisoners. This is then building this link between NGOs and experts who are value-based, who are knowledge-based, and ordinary people. So at the end, after 3 weeks, they are all out, but they bring the idea with them. And they carry the value and the notions with them.
Wow, that's really interesting. And I think now you've brought up a lot more ingredients for this next perfect storm that should be coming for Belarus. It's really interesting to try and have a more refined landscape of what is going on in Belarus.
It has been already 6 weeks since I talked with Ognia. The beginning of 2021 did not bring much joy nor hope to those living under the last dictatorship in Europe. And while citizens continue to protest the stolen presidential elections of August 2020, the regime continues to apply targeted repressions against peaceful citizens, independent media outlets, activists, and civil society organizations. On February 9th, the ongoing protests in Belarus will reach the half-a-year mark. Since August, over 1 million people out of 9 million total population have taken part in the protests at least once. And although the growing fatigue of the protest movement, arrests and torture of peaceful protesters by those in power, persecution and exile of the most active citizens, ongoing pandemic, and freezing winter have diminished the scale of the protests, they continue to happen in the neighborhoods across the country. In response to the ongoing protests, the regime has consolidated its powers and applied new measures to suppress the movement. Financial police now raids the offices of independent media outlets and civil society organizations, looking for the evidence of tax evasion, to open criminal cases and imprison as many subversive voices as possible. The international borders were closed for the first time since the beginning of the pandemic, allegedly to stop the spread of it. However, it is more difficult to leave the country than come in, demonstrating the desperation of the regime to stop the outflow of the workforce from the country. On the other hand, illegitimate president of the country, Alexander Lukashenko, declared, "I am not going to leave," during his end-of-the-year speech. Half a year of peaceful protests resulted in 33,000 arrests, 900 criminal cases executing civil rights, and at least 1,000 documented cases of torture executed by the police and special forces on unarmed citizens. The international community is also building up its response. In January 2021, the European Union, together with Switzerland, Norway, and other European countries, have launched its fourth package of economic sanctions against individuals and companies that support Lukashenko's illegitimate ruling. At the same time, International Ice Hockey Federation stripped Belarus of hosting the World Championship in 2021, injuring the pride of the regime. Without doubt, all these issues show that the regime is weakening. But how much longer Belarusians will have to fight to live in a just and democratic country? Let's hope not for another year. I don't know if there's something else you would like to add.
I would actually. When we started, this is what I said as well. Off the record, but I also want to say it on the record. I've been working with Belarusian civil society and with Belarus for almost 9 years now. Well, 9 years. And I want to apologize, use this opportunity to apologize to Belarusians for not having enough faith. I had no idea, I could not imagine that this was possible in Belarus. And I want to thank them for proving me wrong.
But I have to say also that, as you told me off the record, they themselves didn't believe in themselves
true.
That much.
That is true. Still, that does not absolve me of my responsibility or my personal guilt as well.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Agnin.
Cheers.
Great talking to you.
Žive Belarus.
This has been Forum for Change, a podcast about civil society around the world, produced by Forum Civ, as part of the Swedish partnership program funded by CEDA, the Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency.
If you want to know more about the podcast or this episode's contents, please read the description box. To know more about Forum Civ, take a look at our website, www.forumciv.org. We hope you join us in our second season soon, and we will be very happy to receive your ideas, suggestions of topics, guests, and any kind of contributions that can make the second season of Forum for Change a better experience for all of us. You can send your ideas and suggestions to forumforchange@forumciv.org. You can also follow us on social media as Forum Civ. I am Carlos Cárdenas. Until next time.